Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Bucharest. This is Network Europe, a partnership of Europe's leading international broadcasters. I'm Sarah Elsis in Paris.
Let's now shimmy with your hips. Shimmy. Small shimmy, slow shimmy, and faster. Yeah, faster, faster, faster.
Shimmying into the program this week, Polish dance schools gain popularity over the summer, and a new outdoor movie theater in Bucharest tries to raise awareness about European films.
European films are a bit of a, well, geez, I don't know much about them, apart from a few French films with Gérard Depardieu, or whatever his name is, and that's about it. So I don't know much about European films.
Also on the program, Sweden reduces the number of countries it provides aid to, and our Brussels correspondent explains why Europe needs to coordinate disaster relief, like for the deadly forest fires in Greece over the last couple of weeks.
Firefighting aircraft don't even run on the same radio frequencies and have to be coordinated by a controller on the ground. So this, of course, means a lot of people are putting money and effort into this, but not to the best advantage.
All this and more, including a new quiz question, coming up on Network Europe. This week, the Swedish Parliament decided to scale down the number of countries it helps with foreign aid. It wants aid to be more closely tied to democracy and human rights in recipient countries.
We have not been so orientated to measure results. We have rather been very keen to spend money. And I think we should have a high level of being a good donor in many ways. And that means not only about sums, but also about content and political leadership.
That's Gunilla Carlson, Sweden's Minister for International Development Cooperation. The number of recipient countries will be cut in half, from 70 to 33, though the total amount of money will remain the same. Radio Sweden's Azaria Kiros has more.
This year, Sweden is spending nearly 16,000 million kroner, almost $2,300 million, to help finance development projects around the world. The lion's share of the help goes to Africa. While fighting poverty in Africa will still continue to be given priority, African countries like Liberia and Sierra Leone, who've gone through bloody conflicts, can expect more assistance from Sweden. The government also wants to pay attention to the needs of countries in Eastern Europe, such as Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia, the Ukraine, as well as the West Bank and Gaza. Peace-promoting programs in countries such as Afghanistan, Iraq and Somalia will also benefit from the new development cooperation policy. The rich donor nations have agreed in what is known as the Paris Declaration to streamline their assistance and make sure that the help reaches those who need it most. And the Minister for International Development Cooperation, Gunilla Carlsson, believes it is high time that Sweden reviewed its development cooperation program in line with the Paris Declaration.
We have to focus firstly on fewer countries where we have development cooperation due to the Paris agenda, but also that I need to see results. And if Sweden spread ourselves too thin, we won't be the champions I'd like us to be in, for example, sectors where it comes to human rights and democracy, to promote women's rights especially, but also to see what we can do in the area of environment and other very important areas where we have to focus also.
The focus will also be on making sure that the new development cooperation policy reflects Sweden's moral obligation in promoting democracy and human rights in the world. But not everyone is happy with the proposal. One of the parties represented in Parliament, the Left Party, says the democratic goal, as desirable as it is, should not always be the only guiding objective. Hans Linde, the party's spokesperson on development issues, told Radio Sweden recently that the fight against global poverty should be given priority.
I think there's a contradiction between saying that we should fight poverty all around the world, talking about the Millennium Goals, at the same time saying that we should just support countries that we consider to be democracies, because we know that we have need to fight poverty and inequality between men and women and so on, even in countries that are dictatorships today. So I think it's important, if we want to promote democracy and human rights, that we have a dialogue and that we have open doors. I feel afraid that we'll be discussing more and more about closing doors and ending dialogue.
We have really to see poverty reduction as our main goal. And in order to do that, we have to be able to see results, and also that we in Sweden have been a major donor in many countries, but we now also see emerging donors elsewhere in the world as more and more try to fulfill the Millennium Development Goals.
And Minister Gunilla Carlsson has given assurances that her government will study the repercussions of the new policy in an effort to reduce the impact on the countries losing Swedish development assistance.
We have now scrutinizing very, very carefully in the countries and with our authority, SIDA, where we make analyses that if we phase out in that or that country, what consequences will that take? How long time do we need for phasing out and so on and so forth? So we don't leave anyone beyond, but we also have to see how we can focus and make better results in those countries where we stay.
That report from Radio Sweden's Azaria Kiros. About a month ago here on Network Europe, we talked about the infamous sex scene video posted on the European Commission website. Remember that? The images themselves weren't as graphic as it sounds. The whole thing was supposed to help promote European films. Sex sells. Well, Romania is seeing tangible results. An open-air theater screening European movies is turning around a Bucharest neighborhood. Radio Romania International's Iulian Muresan has more.
This is not exactly the Bronx of Bucharest, but it's close. The area is called Rahova, and it's a mess. It's right behind Ceausescu's Parliament Palace. The area is mostly inhabited by ethnic Roma and looks abandoned. The stray dogs all around the place. Before I entered the cinema garden, I went to buy some cigarettes at the flower market. Among local people sitting and eating sunflower seeds, I obviously looked like an alien. They asked me what I'm looking for. I told them I'm here for a cinema. A man is complaining to me that he tried to get in to see the movies, but there's an entrance fee and he cannot afford to pay that. Finally, I pay around €3 and I'm in. It's a large open area with a 19th century water tower as centerpiece, transformed into a bar. The cinema proper is at the far end of the garden. When I got there, I realized that there are indeed many hot scenes in European films. It's a Spanish film week, and several dozen people are watching Pedro Almodovar's Mala Educación. Bad, bad, bad. At one of the few occupied tables outside the screening area, I meet Dean, a Brit who doesn't like European films and who's been dragged here by a Romanian friend.
I don't know. Spanish films in Romanian. I mean, that'd be great if it's football.
Do you think European film needs promotion?
Well, I've just seen that European thing on YouTube. That was on.
That was not the question.
No, I know, but it was funny because that's about promoting European films, and all it is soft porn. European films are a bit of a, well, geez, I don't know much about them, apart from a few French films with Gérard Depardieu or whatever his name is, and that's about it. So I don't know much about European films.
How did you discover that clip on YouTube?
It was on BBC News website. It was shown, and there's much shock and horror. And then there was something on Romanian TV, an interview with two European people saying, you know, how are you spending European funds promoting soft porn? Because there was lots of other things apparently in the same release on the same film, not just porn, but people have picked up on the porn bit, which is fairly typical. So, yes, European films do need promoting.
Oana is a Romanian working in the film distribution business.
European films need promotion because they are not some commercial kind of films, and that's why they need to be sustained.
I talked to some of the local people here, mostly Roma, here in the flower market, and they're saying that it's too expensive. They would like to watch some movies, but it's kind of expensive. That's €3.
Very nice to bring culture into a bad neighborhood, but the problem is that when you are, you know, making like an entrance for €3, then it's clearly that you are making a kind of, you know, you are building a wall.
Even so, I've seen many local kids who didn't look like they paid the entrance fee. And as the people at the local market told me, even flowers sell better since this place has opened.
That was Radio Romania International's Iulian Muresan. Greece has been struggling to contain devastating forest fires this week that have killed dozens of people. The Greek president declared a state of emergency, and individual European countries have sent aid. Our Brussels correspondent Quentin Dickinson points out that there is a program in the works to organize European-wide assistance for situations exactly like this one, aid for countries who can't deal with disasters on their own. The former EU Commissioner Michel Barnier recommended such a program 18 months ago. It's been welcomed widely, but since then, nothing much has happened.
Impatience is growing here within EU circles, as almost every 6 months now, further reason dramatically is given to the urgency of carrying out the report's recommendations. The present situation is that 11 of the 27 member states are in fact sending men or equipment or both. But of course, none of this is very efficiently coordinated. To take just one difficulty, the firefighting aircraft don't even run on the same radio frequencies and can't communicate between themselves, have to be coordinated by a controller on the ground. So this, of course, means a lot of people are putting money and effort into this, but not to the best advantage, which is why the Barnier report is important. But the member states are always slow at following this type of recommendation. I don't personally believe that the Barnier report will see the light of day in practical terms before the end of next year.
Right, so we have a while. Also this week, there's sort of informal meetings about the environment. Can you tell us what's going to happen there?
Yes, this weekend, the ministers in charge of the environment, that is the ministers from the 27 member states, are meeting in Lisbon, discussing on an informal basis a number of issues, and of course forest fires in Greece and elsewhere will be top of the agenda. These informal gatherings take place every 6 months. These are very important in building mutual confidence within member states, since these meetings have no formal agenda.
So when you're talking informal meeting, it's because it doesn't have a formal agenda? It's not that they're just meeting over a cup of coffee in a diner somewhere?
Well, the idea is that if one can talk informally about important subjects, one is not getting deeply involved in the negotiation, but one can, of course, on a personal and informal basis, get to know better ministers from other countries. Among 27 member states, of course, constantly there are new ministers showing up, their elections, changes of government, changes of party. And so it's very important for the system itself that people get to know each other better on a personal basis.
That was Quentin Dickinson in Brussels. 3 months after elections in Belgium, there's still no sign that a new government is coming together. Coalition talks collapsed after French-speaking parties refused to give Flanders greater autonomy. The stalemate is fueling criticism that Wallonia, the poorer French-speaking south, is feeding off Flanders without putting anything back. There's growing support for right-wing Flemish parties who want to create an independent Flanders. As Vanessa Mock reports, that's worrying Walloons.
Only listen to the people who wants to be separated, and we don't listen to the people who wants to be united.
I'm here in the recording studio of Joshua. It's a French-speaking band from Belgium. Made all the headlines last week because of the fact that they started just putting up the Belgian flag on MySpace.
Okay, now we're on MySpace. We just replaced the band's logo by the Belgian flag. It symbolizes a union in this country, and when you see it, you remember yourself that you're Belgian, and you can see the reaction from the people. 10,000 people in 1 week.
Every day there are some new band with the Belgian flag on MySpace.
There's a big room of separation, and we all need a thing. Remember, hey, this is my country, what's going on?
Belgium's been in a state of crisis ever since the elections at the start of June. Coalition talks collapsed after French-speaking parties refused to give in to demands to hand more power over to Flanders. And there's growing resentment among some Flemish voters that their taxes are being used to prop up the less well-off French part of Belgium. That's fueled calls to create an independent Flanders. And the people here in Namur, a market town in Wallonia, are worried.
Ça va être une catastrophe.
I think it would be a catastrophe if Belgium was to be separated. We're already a very small country.
Pour rester unis.
I can understand the Flemish politician and Flemish government want the separation because the Wallonie is lazy, you know, doing nothing, stay at home, and I think can start by the education. For my part, I'm born in Wallonie and I can speak Flemish. I just can speak a wee bit, but the school system is not very good.
Okay, goedemorgen allemaal.
I'm here at the immersion school, a dual language school in Sombreville, a small commune in the heart of Wallonia. I'm just going to have a word with the teacher. What's your name?
Ariane Phillips.
This was one of the first schools that started this immersion course in Wallonia. Why do you think it is important for these children to learn Dutch?
It is important, as we have two communities in Belgium, to learn the language of the other community. So as Flemish people know a little French and our kids know a little Dutch, and then they can communicate in a good atmosphere.
The Walloons are often criticized by the Flemish-speaking Belgians that they're not very good at Dutch, that they should be making a lot more effort.
That's true. I have the feeling that there is a real desire from lots of parents, because they, as child, had lots of difficulties to learn Dutch. They are aware that their children will have more possibilities to find jobs if they know several languages. Perhaps that a few of them think about the fact that it's a manner to help Belgium and not to separate the two communities.
There's certainly a growing awareness here in Wallonia that a lot more effort needs to be made to heal the deep divisions within Belgium. But it'll take a lot more, and no doubt some very tough political wrangling, to stifle the parties who are calling for an independent Flanders.
That was Radio Netherlands' Vanessa Mock. When you think bullfighting, you think Spain. Well, France also has a bullfighting tradition, though it's come under criticism for being, well, too violent. The group that regulates French advertising has banned an ad showing a bull being killed during a match. RFI's Anna Stoop Roy meets some aficionados and some detractors of the sport.
Bullfighting season in France continues through the last week of August. For the past few decades, a group of NGOs working for better treatment for animals are trying to stop this practice. This year, the French advertisement regulatory body, the BVP, stopped an anti-bullfighting advertisement from going on air. The real-life ad shows a matador drilling a knife into the head of a bull after piercing some spears into its flesh. The regulatory body, BVP, argued that the advertisement was too violent to be shown on public television. Animal rights organizations are up in arms. On the other side of the bullfighting debate are those who love the sport, and that includes the French Prime Minister, François Fillon. Even the French President, Nicolas Sarkozy, is believed to be a lover of the game. Now, coming back to the banning of the advertisement, the group which wants the ad to go on air now has a new argument. It criticizes the BVA for banning the advert instead of banning the practice. The Brigitte Bardot Foundation is an NGO for animal rights. Christophe Murray of the Brigitte Bardot Foundation says the BVP is giving conflicting messages.
Là, le BVP a pris une décision pour ne pas.
The BVP decided to ban the advertisement, and this shows a double speak on their behalf, because they do not want the French citizens to see cruel acts on the television, but they do not ban kids from going to bullfighting shows. I mean, bullfighting is banned in the north of France, but someone living there can go to the south of France and see it live. And these days you do see TV reports on the bullfighting festivals. But do TV journalists show you images of the bull being killed? Never. Whether it is a tradition or not, it's unacceptable to carry on such cruel and violent sports.
The French legislation considers bullfighting a criminal offence. But on paper, these laws do not apply to 13 provinces where bullfighting is considered a tradition. Bullfighting is practiced in almost the whole of the south of France. There are two kinds of bullfighting. The one practiced in the southwestern coast of France is less violent. Ribbons are tied to the horns of the bull, and the game is to pull those ribbons out. But the more violent kind of bullfighting, where the animal is killed, came to France from Spain in the 1850s. Those who love this second type say it has become a French tradition. Yves Treyard is the deputy director of the French daily newspaper Le Figaro. He wrote an editorial to explain why he supported bullfighting.
D'abord, pour une raison très simple, c'est que j'apprécie la corrida.
I love bullfighting shows. I appreciate it when it's done by a skilled matador. I think that the anti-bullfighting groups, their arguments are not very strong. They say, oh, the world is boring because people around the planet are now losing their differences and their traditions. But they forget that by attacking bullfighting, they are contradicting themselves. Bullfighting is a French tradition. The bulls are born and reared for the sport and nothing else.
In neighboring Spain, the state-owned TV channel made history by not broadcasting for the first time a single bullfighting match this year. For Network Europe in Paris, I'm Anna Stuproy.
Turning now to Germany, a fresh series of racially motivated attacks on foreigners over the past 2 weeks has refueled a debate over banning the far-right National Democratic Party. The European Union's Justice Commissioner, Franco Frattini, was quoted as saying he'd back a ban. A previous attempt to ban it was struck down by the German Supreme Court in 2003 after it came out that some testimony came from informants in the party. From Berlin, Deutsche Welle's Hardy Graupner has more.
Earlier this month, a local mob in the eastern German town of Mügeln attacked and hurt 8 Indian street vendors. Last weekend, physical assaults on foreigners were reported in 3 other places in Germany. And every time when a series of racially motivated attacks on foreigners gets coverage in the media, mainstream politicians here resort to a knee-jerk reaction and launch a debate on the banning of the far-right National Democratic Party, which is represented in several regional state parliaments. But Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats have become a great deal more cautious on this front after a failed attempt to ban the NPD in 2003. CDU Interior Affairs spokesman Wolfgang Bosbach says that as long as the state has informers in the NPD, one shouldn't even think about going to court again.
The NPD is a dangerous party, and this is why we cannot do without informers providing the intelligence services with important details about its activities. A renewed attempt to ban this party could again last several years, and I don't think we should take the risk of it failing again.
Berlin's Social Democrat Interior Minister Erhard Körting disagrees. He believes that the informers are of no great value and that intelligence agencies could stop using them.
Whenever the NPD violates the spirit and letter of the Constitution, it doesn't happen in a clandestine way. Everyone can hear and see what they think and do. In other words, I don't really need intelligence people to find out just how dangerous the NPD is. And if you don't employ any informers anymore, the chances of banning the party will be excellent.
Körting says it's hard to communicate to people why a party like this even receives state funding and is able to use the money to build up its regional structures, particularly in eastern Germany.
The fact that the NPD is able to act in the public way that it does sends out a signal to many people here that there's nothing wrong with harboring anti-foreigner sentiments. Banning the party would certainly keep a lot of people from openly supporting the party's ideology. I'm not saying that you can prevent attacks on foreigners completely just by banning the NPD, but we would certainly be able to reduce the number of such incidents.
But such arguments cut little ice with the conservative interior minister in the southern state of Bavaria, Günter Beckstein. He argues that banning a party doesn't remove its ideology, and the risk of losing a court battle again is too high.
A second failure would boost the NPD's morale in an irresponsible manner. It would be the breeding ground for even more radicalism. Politically, it would be a disaster, and we shouldn't really let this happen.
That report from Deutsche Welle's Hardy Graupner. So now for something for you dancers out there, or those of you who'd like to learn. Michal Kubicki of Polish Radio's External Service recently made the rounds of dance schools in Warsaw and found a surge in enrollments during the summer months.
We can start with the warm-up. Let's do small circles, and the big circles with your hips. Let's now shimmy with your hips. Shimmy. Small shimmy, slow shimmy. And faster. Yeah, faster, faster, faster.
Belly dance classes are among the most popular in Polish dance schools, all of which are delighted with the fast-growing number of students. In Warsaw alone, some 15,000 people have enrolled for summer courses. There's a lot to choose from. Salsa and samba, hip-hop, flamenco, ballroom dances, special classes for couples who want to impress their guests at their wedding party, and two-week resident courses in holiday resorts. Sylwia Raźna, who runs the school tancerze.pl, explains why the summer is a time of good business for her school.
There is a lot of people working in Warsaw who don't get the chance to get out of Warsaw, and they are looking for some entertainment. So this dance classes, especially like exotic dances or Latin dances, they will remind them of a vacation time, of traveling to different countries.
We have a lot of fun here. We've been coming here for 1.5 years now.
So by now you are quite an experienced dancer.
No, I'm afraid I can't say that about ourselves. But we are trying and we are having good fun.
After these classes, do you also practice at home?
Well, we used to, but now we have such steps that they don't fit into the rooms anymore. They need much more space, so basically we practice over here. We come to the classes and we also have practices on weekends.
It's kind of a hobby. You're never bored because each classes you get to learn something new and you don't need to be a professional.
Polish dancers, we have to admit, are not popular, but Sylwia Raźna thinks this is a pity.
Dances, Krakowiak, Mazur, all those dances are very energetic. The outfits are very colorful. It's an interesting dance, it's interesting music, interesting culture also. I think we should try to get to know it more.
The vivacious Krakowiak indeed requires formidable skills. Small wonder perhaps that other types of dances are more popular these days.
The fastest you can do it, yeah? Don't be ashamed. Okay, now stretch out, yes?
And that brings us to the end of Network Europe for this week. Next week, we'll be doing a special program on China and its relationship with the EU. To get you thinking about that theme, for this month's quiz question, please send us a couple of lines about how China, in any form, affects you and your daily life. This can be anything from Chinese-made products, immigration, culture, anything really. Email your answer to contact@networkeurope.org. We'll pick our favorite answers and read them on the air at the end of the month. Here's a Polish mazurka to end the show. It may be hard to learn to dance to, but it's easy on the ears. Network Europe is a partnership of Radio Netherlands, Radio Sweden, Radio France International, Radio Romania, Radio Slovakia, Radio Slovenia, Radio Prague, Polish Radio External Services, Radio Bulgaria, and Deutsche Welle. On behalf of everyone at Network Europe, thanks for listening. I'm Sarah Elsis in Paris.